Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
That's Not Gunna Productions podcast.
Lady Mouth.
Hey ladies, it's time for another episode of Lady Mouth, what? The show where me, Mixie Plum, tries to create a healing platform for women to share their stories and for people to heal from them as well. I know I'm always healed listening to the people I'm privileged to talk to. I love humans. I know that's really weird, but I want to protect humans, especially women. That might be why I'm a healer and a massage therapist. I don't know. Not that I'm being genderist, sorry. It's just women, we need it a bit more, don't you think, Terry?
Yes, absolutely. We live in a patriarchal society, so we really need to start standing up for ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm just trying to create here, but everybody meet Terry, one of my best friends. Well, she's actually my best friend's ex-wife, but we became very close and I love her. I love you, Terry.
Thank you for having me on your show. I think it's a privilege as well.
Oh, thank you, Terry. I'm so glad to have you because you have had such a life and we're only talking about a piece of it right now. So let's begin with, how did we meet? I already ruined that. We met through your ex-husband, who is my best friend.
Yes, we did. And you cooked a lovely veggie turkey burger for me, the best I've had yet.
Really? Oh, yes. That means a lot to me. Thank you. I'm so glad. I would cook for you anytime. That's another way to comfort and be maternal with people. Cook for them. I love cooking for people.
Yes. I think that's a sign that you love someone.
Oh my God, I just told my boyfriend yesterday, I offered him half my sandwich and I took it really seriously and he laughed at me. I'm like, no, sandwiches are love. If I make you food, it's love.
That's true.
So Terry, I want to talk about you though. You are a photographer and a fucking amazing photographer at that.
Thank you, Michelle.
You're welcome, Terry. Why don't you, before I go to asking you questions about it, you also suffer from bipolarity and other mental illnesses. And that's the point of our episode today. And just a quick little side note, one day Terry's going to let me write her autobiography and Through the Bipolar Lens will be the title. That's Terry picked that title, and I think it's awesome, so I always want to use it. Is that all right, Terry?
Yeah, of course, you know that.
All right, I'm just being silly. All right, so Terry, how did you get into photography?
Well, I've always been interested in photography, but when I was 18 years old, I started working for a photo finishing lab. That's back in the olden days, we used to make film and we used to have to process it and then print them. And that was called photo finishing, and as well sold cameras. So that was my first introduction to meeting professional photographers and just all kinds of people that love photography. And that's how I fell in love with it.
Oh, that's awesome. What was your first camera, a Canon or a Nikon?
No, it was one of those, it was one of those 126 cameras that was used back in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, wow.
My mom was the first one to put a camera in my hand, and that was the kind of camera that it was.
That's amazing. I was kidding about the Canon or Nikon. What?
Actually, Michelle, camera used to send the film off to get processed, and it would come back in the mail. And oh, the joy when those pictures would come in the mail. It was just like fantastic.
Oh my God, I remember in the 80s and 90s, we'd go to the photo booths in the middle of the parking lots, and then our pictures would be there.
Mm-hmm, true.
Yeah, that was the same exciting. What kind of things did you first take pictures of?
Well, I would like to go back to your question about what choice of cameras I use. And I I use Nikon, and I always have.
Oh, really? Is there something about Nikon that you particularly love?
Cameras are like cars. You know, you got Lincolns and Cadillacs. Which one do you prefer? They all have the same options, but some of them vary a difference. And I'm not going to get into the technicality of it. I'm just going to say that's the one I like.
Awesome. No, that's awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
I love how protective every photographer is about their choice in camera.
I don't know. I think I think you are making a correct statement with photographers are never wanting to tell their secrets out.
Oh, gosh, no. I had a friend once for 15 years, and I, through college and all up until she started her professional photography career, so I kind of had a really fun experience because in the 90s, I'd go in the dark room with her. I'd inhale the chemicals. We'd break into abandoned buildings and take pictures. I'd be naked in 20 degree weather with a pair of fairy wings on. Like, to get the, I'd be holding a light board and my breath at the same time. It was like really renegade 90s photography.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, I think for me, mm-hmm. because I'm a photographer, I feel far more comfortable behind the camera than I do in front of it.
And that comes to my question. What do you see when you look through a camera?
Well, you know, your eye is always developing and you have a certain maturity. There's a basic understanding of what you would like to photograph. And the more you learn about photography and the more you do photography, the more that you're able to achieve that goal because you have a firmer understanding of how it works. But photography means painting with light. For me, my photography is all about, I like color. Color is emotional. I like lighting. Lighting, could be soft. It could be dramatic. So I personally like to use available light. You were mentioning a reflector. I don't want to get into the technicalities of that type of thing. I will just say I like to use available light and I use a lot of color and I like to have my photographs tell a story.
I think that's lovely.
Photograph people. That's my genre. I photograph everything. I've done every kind of photography you can imagine. Weddings.
I was just going to say even weddings, because that's like the hardest. That's the thing that unless you specifically get into wedding photography as a regular photographer, you don't want to do weddings, right? It's too much action.
When you have the privilege of photographing someone, in that moment, you can't get it wrong because there's no going back. So you got to be on good chops, know what you're doing, and the people will want to use you when they see the style. Like everybody has a style when they draw, they have a style when they sing, and they have a style when they're doing photography.
Yes.
I think for me, when I was younger, it was all about working underneath professional photographers for free as an apprentice. So I never went to college. I never took a photography course in my life, but I've been lucky enough to have my work published nationally, internationally. And I've been lucky enough. When I worked entertainment photography for like 10 years.
We're getting there. But first, let me ask, what kind of photographers did you apprentice under? All in LA or?
No. This is when I was coming up in Georgia, I lived in Atlanta for like 4 or 5 years. And I worked in, and that's where I met my wondrous, most best loved friend in the world, Honor Woodard, who was a brilliant photographer. Like, I hail her.
And, excellent.
Yeah. And so I would do that in Atlanta. And then in Philadelphia, I did that as well. So, and then in LA, I started to do it, but I had a firmer grasp of photography. I love art. I love painting. And painting is all about light and composition. And the camera sees two-dimensionally, not three-dimensionally like we do. So to learn all of that, it's like, I don't want to get into the...
No. I was actually going to say, this former friend of mine who is a professional photographer now, and she is amazing. She taught me that photography is light manipulation. She said, like, she introduced me to Deanne Arvis and Joel Peter Witkin, Ansel Adams, Sally Mann. Oh, Diane. I thought you'd love Deanne Arvis.
I love Deanne Arvis. Absolutely.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, because of this woman, I got exposed to the photography world. I wouldn't know who Deanne Arvis was if it wasn't for her. So I owe her a lot because it allows me to talk to you on a level, you know, you're not going to get into specifics, but I do understand a lot of what you're saying. So I'm like, yes, I understand what you're saying. But when
you look at a lot of art and you look at a lot of photography, then you become to understand how light works. And like you said, manipulation of light.
Yeah. Kubrick was like that with his, Kubrick's one of those light geniuses.
Mm-hmm. True.
Now, with your mental illnesses, I'm not going to call you out. We're talking specifically about bipolar here. Now, is it something for you that just comes up, or at now that because you're older, is it something that's more controllable for you?
When I was young, as many people who suffer from bipolar, you're misdiagnosed and you're not medicated correctly.
Okay.
It took me until I was almost 40 years old to be diagnosed with the proper diagnosis and to get on the regular medication that helps to stabilize my moods. Bipolar, it varies in different degrees with people. Mine is pretty damn severe. I take my medication religiously because I learned from my mother who committed suicide. She had mental illness as well. But she would always take her medicine. And so I thought, I'm going to always be med compliant, because when you have these illness, you start taking the medicine, you think, I feel fine. I don't need that anymore. I don't need it. And then 6 weeks later, you're in the mental hospital because you're having a nervous breakdown. And for me, the mental illness is, it's who I am. It's like if you have diabetes, it's who you are. If you have
diabetes,
it's who you are. It doesn't go away. It can only be managed. And sometimes it goes off kilter and even the medicine will stop working and your body will build a tolerance up and then you have to get changed. But one thing I want to say to all of those who are listening is I understand how this is a very lonely disease. I understand what it feels like to not know what is real and what is not real and to question yourself. I understand what it feels like to have everybody you love in your life go away from you because they can't handle your mental illness. There's a lot of stigma to mental illness. Mental illness is a horrible thing to have. When you have other diseases, people are more understanding. They're not judgmental and they can hang in there with you more. I don't know if I'm being correct in that, but that's just been my observation.
I think you're pretty right on. I mean, I struggled with depression for years until I figured a way to manage it, to live my fucking life, you know, without crying all the time. And
you
feel very alone. You feel very, very alone. I mean, my breaking point was when I had both the babies and I had severe postpartum depression on top of my regular depression. That was not fun. Before you were properly diagnosed, when you were in, say, you know, since it is part of you, did it affect how you conducted your photography or what you saw, or did a picture not come out the way your vision wanted it to?
I got diagnosed at 20 years old that I had this illness. There was different diagnoses thrown in there in between, like schizoaffective disorder, which I don't have. But, you know, when you ask me, what has photography done for me? I call it art therapy. When I am out of my mind, and when I say out of my mind, I haven't slept for 5 nights because that's what bipolar does to you.
Wow.
My mood is all over the place. I'm questioning what's going on in my head. I pick the camera up and I just start shooting. And actually, it's been some of my best work.
That's amazing. So now I'm getting to the fun part, because when you said before how when you take a picture of a human and you're honored, you, all right, I'm going to just call this out real quick. You've taken pictures of George Martin. And before I ask you to tell me all about being a rock photographer or whatever you want to share, what the hell was that moment like? Because I'm not even a huge Beatles fan, but I'm sure people who are listening who are huge Beatles fans are like, she photographed George Martin?
And Ringo Starr, I had privilege of meeting them. Talking with them, and in a private, not a public arena. George Martin was in a hotel room in New York City, and my ex-husband was conducting the interview and I was doing the photography, and then we got to hang out with him for a bit, and he was just wonderful.
Oh, that's lovely. I bet it was, are you a big Beatles fan? Was it a good experience, like a great experience for you?
It was an I'm not worthy experience.
Oh, you're so worthy. You know you are, bitch. Don't even be like that. You are one of the most beautiful people I've ever met, and I love you so much.
I love you too. Thank you.
Thank you. I mean, you're welcome. So,
and another really great artist that I know and I photographed and I know personally is Brian Wilson. My best friend is Carney Wilson.
Oh, are you guys still friends? I didn't know if you go on and off, I thought. I didn't know if I was allowed to ask it. Yeah.
We go on and off. Her life is very busy with work and her two children and her husband, but we go communicate on the phone. It's not like before she had the kids when we were always together.
Yeah.
So, you know, I call her, she's my heart friend. I wouldn't say my best friend. Honor is my best friend. But she, I would be with her and her father, and that was another big privilege for me to be around such a musical genius.
I don't blame you. Oh my God, Brian Wilson. I mean, yeah. I love the Beach Boys. I like the Beach Boys better than the Beatles. People are going to kill me now. Oh, that's so cool, though, the Beach Boys. I just had an argument with my friend, my content creator. I'm calling her out now. We had an argument. She's like, I thought Kokomo was in Indiana. I'm like, no, it's fictional. She's like, millennials, right? I'm just kidding, millennials. Anyway, so tell me a bit about when you were a rock photographer. You've had those amazing pictures of Kiss. Like, just the whole 10-year experience. How would you sum it up, really? Because I mean, we could talk about that forever.
I would sum it up like this, because I was fortunate to be able to have that job. It was a great job, but it was also a lot of stress, because when you photograph in that format, the light is always changing. The subject is always moving. There's 50,000 fans, and the ones behind you paid $1,000 for their ticket, so they're not real happy you're in front of them. And incidences have happened.
Really?
Yes, but I would get very nervous at some times. I would get extremely nervous because I don't have I worry, and this is before there was LCD screens. This is before there was digital cameras. This is like at the end of my photography career, they started having digital cameras, but you cannot constantly look down to see if you're getting the shot. You know, when you get a shot, like if I got a shot, I'd be like, that's the money shot. I know. And because these people are wanting you to take good pictures to make money for them, that image sells them. So it's a lot of stress, but it's a lot of fun. And I did well. I did very well. And I photographed so many people, I can't even remember. I've photographed a lot of people.
That's amazing. I've seen a lot of your photos, but I really want to see all of, I want to see every photo you take.
But hey, that would be cool. I would have to say another really cool moment was being able to photograph Michael Jackson. That was
I am so jealous. Oh my God, you didn't tell me that one. Michael. You know, he died on my birthday. Oh, how crazy. Sad. 10 years ago, he died on my birthday.
That's sad.
Yeah, my mom called. She's like, Michael Jackson's dead. Happy birthday, by the way. I was like, oh God, great. I love Michael. I grew up with, you know, I'm born like in late 70s. So Michael has just been my whole life, you know. Sure. I mean, I stopped listening to him after the, you know, the 90s, but oh gosh. Mm-hmm. What was photographing him like? Did you get to talk to him?
I did not get to talk to him. I was hired to do a 3-day shoot at the Pasadena Civic Center for the Dick Clark 50th anniversary bandstand.
Wow.
And everybody and anybody was there. Like Little Richard was like, I'm like, oh my knees with Little Richard. I couldn't believe it.
Oh my God. And he just passed away too.
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's all.
That's okay. I love having any glimpse into your amazing life I can. I think you're amazing. You've been through so much goddamn shit. Like more shit than most people. Let's face it. Like you've told me stuff. Dave has told me stuff. I mean, for fuck's sake, girl. But now I want to know about now, Terry. We know about past Terry.
Mm-hmm.
How has your style and vision evolved now with your photography in your stage of life?
Well, I was lucky. I wouldn't say lucky. I worked hard for this. I had 3 album covers this year of artists that came out. 3 different artists used my work for their album covers this year. And that
That's
was
great.
Really awesome. Yeah. I have the ability not to be afraid and to step outside of my comfort zone and to be slow. I was so fast because entertainment photography was so fast, but I'm very, like I said, portraiture is my forte, but whatever I do, I'm conscious and cognizant of what I want to have and able to execute it. But I do it in a way that is slow. Like I'm slower. I'm way more observant. I see everything that's going on around me, but now I really am enjoying it more because it's like an extension of myself.
Oh, I love that. So what you've been doing a lot of nature photography, you said, right? Or just mostly humans and portraiture?
No, I've been I don't want to say I'm a nature photographer because I'm in no stretch by the imagination a nature photographer. I want to photograph, like I just photographed a woman lying on the street on the sidewalk on her back and another woman behind her with the fence behind the both of them, and she's facing the fence away from me, and it was so dramatic and such a powerful image because I wouldn't call it photojournalistic style photography, but it's photography. Whatever it is, I'll be honest with you, I could photograph a banana, I could photograph a cantaloupe. I'll photograph anything. When I'm sick, trust me, I will photograph whatever I can. And because now I have the understanding of photography that I did not earlier in my life, I can actually have interesting images. And unfortunately, the only real subject I've been able to photograph is myself lately.
Yeah, I missed my opportunity because you split town and now I gotta go to California to get some Terry a photo shoot from you. I swear to God, I can't wait. One day I'm gonna have a Terry Sharp photo of me. It's gonna be glorious.
I would just be so happy, like I said before, I'd be so happy to do that.
I just want to hang out with you. You had to leave Pennsylvania. Thank God. Yeah. Let's not get into that. Now we touched on this a bit earlier. And so when you say your understanding of photography now, what is that understanding and how has it helped you heal with your life, your struggles, your past, your present, your future?
It's helped me because I could get outside of my head and I could just start photographing, and it like music takes you away. It's very good for mental illness. It takes you out of your head. You know, you do breathing and grounding techniques, but the photography is always in your hand, and you could, like I said, take a picture of a baseboard. And when you're doing that, it's not like I'm consciously thinking, oh, I want to convey when I am, well, I think like that. When I am well, I think, what am I consciously wanting to convey with this image? when I'm not well, when I'm sick and I'm using photography for my art therapy, then yes, I'm cognizant, but I'm just allowing it to happen. Whatever's happening, I allow it to happen. I don't worry about technicalities. I don't worry about anything else besides, it's like almost it flows through me. I don't think about
it. Like you're channeling it.
Like a channel, yeah.
And you were, I mean, even hearing your story, you could tell you're a born photographer because you didn't go to school. You were self, I mean, yes, I mean, some people go, you know, school or no school. It doesn't always determine how good a photographer you are. You learned by experience, and that was your school. You know, you had the mentors.
Yeah, I had the mentors, exactly. I had the, and like I said, photographers are very, keep their secrets very close to their chest. These people allowed me to, like, do the schlepping work. Schlep this here, do that there, set this up here, do that there. Pose the client. I learned all about posing. I learned all about different lenses and lighting and artificial lighting. And, you know, they really did help me. And I worked and worked. The one thing I could say, if you want to be a photographer, is keep shooting and don't stop. And,
yeah.
You know, the thing is, today we have a lot of people who all have cell phones and they're all taking photos and they think they're professional looking when they're really just snapshots because they can't tell the difference. When I look back on my early work, I see snapshots. Very few. First of all, I'm going to digress. When you're a professional photographer, all that means is you get paid. You could take the shittiest pictures in the world, and if you're paid $5, that constitutes being professional because you got paid for it.
Yeah.
So it's exactly.
So I am not a professional writer. Unless like the 10 people who bought my book on the Kindle for free read it, you know?
I love you. I love you.
I love you.
I'm lucky one that day. I am. I'm lucky that
you're
I am.
You're very fucking lucky. Dude, you took a picture of the fifth fucking Beetle. Like,
I took a picture of the Beetle.
Yeah, Ringo. I love Ringo. I love Ringo. I gotta stop forgetting about Ringo. He's so cute, and he's married to a Bond girl.
I know. What was I gonna say?
Let's get back on track here. You were talking about photography and healing, and you were imparting some wisdom to people who might be dealing with mental illness and art at the same time. I think most of us are. I mean, you know, through our
yes,
art,
I agree. I have to agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, Dave, your ex-husband and my best friend, he even says, like, pain is the great art maker, you know?
Mm-hmm, it is. And I will tell you something. I thank God that I have a camera. There was like 4 years I didn't have a camera.
Oh boy.
And it was really difficult for me. It was like I didn't have an outlet. Art is an outlet. I agree. I think some people, and I was going to go back to this with the cell phones and the thinking that they're doing professional type images when they're not. I think just doing the images, whether they're great or not, doesn't matter. You're actually creating, and that's the process. And the process is what helps heal you. Not like if you have a great outcome, something that's just fantastic. Well, that's just, you know, icing on the cake. But the thing is, just to be able to do something artistic when you have mental illness is very important.
Oh, yes. Oh, gosh, yes. If I didn't have writing, I'd be dead. If I couldn't write every day, which I do, I write every day since I was like 5. You know, I mean, I guess we're the same with our art like that. And you know, I love to sing, and I sing every day, so I wouldn't be sane if I didn't do that shit.
True. I just want to touch on bipolar specifically.
Yes, please do. I really want that.
Bipolar specifically, your mind is going so fast that you cannot read. Your mind is going so fast that you cannot write. Your mind is, like, really freaking, like rapid thinking. Being fixated on things. When you have a camera, it's easy because you don't have to do anything but point it. You know what I mean? It's not like you have to sit down and think. You don't have to think. Because when you're like that, when you're sick like that, it's very difficult to think, to be focused. I think in depression, it was difficult to be focused as well.
I couldn't even read.
I know it's painful. I don't want to dredge up your past, but I know your past. You know your past with your children and your mom, specifically Dylan and Diana. Well, those are your two children, sorry. Have the tragedies that you've encountered affected your, how has it affected your photography? Have you kept them in your mind when you work?
I feel that when I'm working, I'm just seeing. I'm not specifically, I might have a concept in mind of what I would like to do before I pick up the camera.
Do the colors that you use for emotion, do any of them represent people you know? I'm all about color too. You've seen my tattoos. Like, I need all the color.
True.
And emotion.
I use what's aesthetically pleasing, color in that way. But color, like blue tones, cool tones, you know, they're more like relaxed and chill, where warm tones and red tones and different variations of them, they're very passionate and strong and powerful. And then the blue,
like you.
And the dark. I would say that I'm a.
Your hair's red, your pillow's red, your glasses frame look red.
Yeah,
you
that?
Are passion, yo. Oh, that's the sun and the moon with the Japanese waves. That's cool.
Here's my blue bed.
And your blue bed, like water. And your green carpet. See, you're all nature-y and colors and relaxed and healing and passionate and bold. That's what all the colors in your room say, you know?
Yeah. You know who helped me to do that was my daughter, Diana.
Oh, really?
A long time ago, I was talking to her. The last time was in 2011. And she said, Mommy, make your space you.
Oh, that's nice.
You. It makes you feel good. And this is the first time that I really feel like comfortable and it's my space. And I created this space. And it wasn't dictated by some man in my life who was overpowering me with what they wanted. I allowed that
good.
To happen. I shouldn't say they overpowered
don't
me.
Don't we all?
I allowed that to happen because I didn't want to deal with the grief.
It's rough. You have done a lot of, you have taken a lot of things. Like, I don't know, you feel free to share what you want, but you've had it really fucking tough, dude. I can't imagine. Like, you're one of my heroes. Like, because I'm still, I'm only 42. Like, I just started my healing like a decade ago. You've been healing longer than I have, and you know the shit you've been through. I know I keep saying that, sorry.
I think that, you know, it was difficult. My upbringing was quite difficult, but I like to look at the glasses half full as opposed to the glasses half empty.
Good.
And I think one thing that all of those experiences has done for me is to make me far more compassionate and loving and accepting and non-judgmental. That's what those experiences have done for me. And at the same time, I feel feudalistic about things when I'm sick. Like, you know, I think there's so much pain inside.
Yeah.
That when you get sick with the bipolar and it brings you down, it can make you just feel like, you know, here's an excuse of why. Look at this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. Well, shit happens. It's called life. And a lot of people have tragedies. And John Lennon said, I don't know if he said it or not, but I think he said, like, pain is what we measure. What is his name, Michelle?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
I think
John Lennon.
Something like God is a concept by which we measure our pain. That's what he said.
Oh, he was bigger than Jesus.
Yes. And then I think that pain is relative. What might be painful to someone who's never experienced what I have is just as real to them as what I've experienced for myself, because pain is pain.
Some things
I will admit shatter people, and I got shattered. I am not whole. I am, like, you ever hear of Reiku? Reiku is a Japanese art form of porcelain where they crack porcelain, put it back together, and they like that. That's their beauty, is the brokenness.
Oh, the metaphor is just outstanding. What we all do to ourselves when we pick up our own pieces and we fit them back in slowly but surely. Right?
I always say I have a Reiku heart.
That's beautiful.
And I think that you know, we have, there's different levels of, you know, that people can have a tolerance for what happens. My history, and I'm going to start getting into it now since we're talking about it.
Okay.
Is that it has shattered me, and I'm taking time to build it back together. It has affected my ability to trust others greatly. It has affected my level of self-esteem very greatly. It's something I work on every single day. I always feel less than. I never feel worthy. When I was younger, before I was given the proper diagnosis and the medication, I would self-medicate with alcohol and drugs like cocaine and alcohol, whatever I could do to numb the pain. It's very, for me, I don't know that I'll ever be whole. I feel fragmented. But I know that I'm a good person. I don't hurt people. I always tried, when I was 18, I looked in the mirror and I said, I always want to be able to look in that mirror and live with what I'm looking back at. And I could say I've done that. I think that, you know, we have a soul, and I can't speak for we, I'm not going to preach. I'm just going to say me. I am a good person. I've always tried to do right to everyone besides myself. Now that I'm an old woman, I am trying to do things that are right for myself. You're mentioning, I showed you the room. That's doing right by myself. Sharing this story is the first time in my life I've done anything like this, but I'm doing it because if you are listening and you are identifying with anything that I'm saying, there is answers, and there is hope, and there are people that can help you. You don't have to live all alone and with the pain, and then the people that you depend on cannot help you because they don't understand. There's an answer. It's not a fix. There is no fix for bipolar. Like I say, looking through the lens of bipolar to my life is how it is. And when you're on the medication is affecting your perception of reality as well. So it's all interconnected. But the thing that is the answer is acceptance. And just, you know, being able to accept this part of yourself, which is your whole self, because your brain is everything. You know, oh, I have a foot, my toe is broken, oh, the toe is broken. But in your head, that affects every single thing in your life. So when you feel, for you people out there that are feeling, perhaps you might have an anxiety disorder, you might have too much stress in your life, you might have depression, or you might even have something as serious as bipolar. There is people out there who can help. And the medication, and I will testify to this, works. It doesn't work to take it away because there's still ups and downs, like a little wave, but it's not like the giant tidal waves and mountains that you experience. That's like a metaphor of, I don't even know, it's an example of what the emotions could get like. And the one thing I always keep in my mind is this disease will kill me. It killed my mother. This is nothing to play around with. Back in the early 80s, when my mother passed away, she had been suffering for so many years. I don't know what it was, depression, bipolar, schizophrenia. I don't know. All I know is that they didn't have the medications then that there are today. Today, you can take medicines that have very few side effects. Meaning like you don't gain a whole lot of weight. Some of them make you shake a little bit. But it's not like back in the olden days, because back then they just didn't have the right medication.
Yeah. You know, I thank God for science. Oh no, I'm sorry. Thank science for science. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah, for sure. I feel sad for people who, I know a lot of different cultures and some religions do not agree with the medication. They do not feel it is necessary. Personally, I'm only talking about myself. When I start hearing voices in my head that are not there, like it sounds like a TV playing in the other room, but there's no TV. Or I start seeing wisps going out of the peripheral vision of my mind. When I start getting paranoid feelings, when I don't sleep for days on end, when I have rapid speech pattern, when I have all of these symptoms of bipolar, that could kill you. If you don't have medication to take you down, to control you, to manage you, you can literally end up committing suicide because it's very, very difficult to deal with. You don't have a firm grasp on what is real and what is not real. I would have to ask people, I would say to them, is what I'm thinking real or not real? And then I needed them to validate for me.
Wow.
So, you know, another thing is impulsivity. They have medications to calm that down, because people who have what I have will go out and spend like $3,000 when we only make $300 a week. We'll go out. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, you can't help like yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that I'm grateful for that.
I'm glad. I'm glad. Yeah, I'm glad that you finally have the help you need after struggling for a bunch of years. And
I was just going to say, I would like to say I am not alone in that. There's a lot of other people who have suffered from this mental illnesses. And I just want to mention one other thing that's been very helpful to me is therapy. I go to therapy once a week, and I have been using cognitive behavioral therapy, which has been very helpful to me. It's got me through a lot of these ups and downs. Like I said, when you're on the medication, you have little waves. When you're not on it, it's really big waves. So at least I'm not experiencing the really big waves.
No, of course not. And Terry, from all of my heart, thank you for sharing that and giving some advice to people struggling with bipolar as well, because it's not something I'm personally familiar with besides knowing people that are bipolar. And I've seen many different behaviors from many different people. And this look through your lens has been exhilarating. So thank you. And I love you so much. What?
I love you too. And I really like the fact that you introduced the whole subject into like what positive things and major accomplishments that somebody with bipolar can do. You can live a normal life. You can have major accomplishments. There's doctors and lawyers and actresses and people from every walk of life that are able to maintain with their mental illness because of everything I just said, because of that. So I'm glad that you did bring up and you kept saying, wow, the Beatle, because not anyone can just walk in there and sit with fucking George.
Yeah, Trump. Yeah. You know, you're the bipolar Beatle, babe. That's what you're talking about, because you're using your lady mouth. That's right, Terry. Yeah, roar more. Roar more, baby. Roar more. No, you're going to roar more in our next episode with you. You guys will see Terry again. There's just too much to talk about with Terry. And I thank you again for doing this for me. And I hope we talk soon.
What? I will talk to you soon.
Okay, let's both say bye now.
Bye. Goodbye, everyone. Bye.
Thank you for opening your lady mouth.
What's good, people? This your boy, Big Bruh. I'm the host of Live with Big Bruh, a podcast where I keep it raw, uncut, uncensored, and unfiltered, always keeping it 100 and giving you guys my opinion on topics that you need to go check out. Live with Big Bruh is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio, or wherever else you like to listen to your favorite podcast. Make sure you go subscribe, rate, and share it. And while you're at it, tell your friends to tell their friends to do the same thing. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at Live with Big Bruh. And remember, they can hold you, but they can't stop you. Big Bruh out.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.